Welcome to tonight's Saturday Night Special, episode 101.
Hey, I'm Jamie Lutz, and I challenge you to invest in yourself, invest in others, develop your influence, and impact the world by using the three T's, your time, your talent, and your treasures to live out your calling. Having the ability to find your own pathways to purpose is key. And one way to be inspired to do that is to listen to this, the Inspired Stewardship Podcast with my friend, Scott Mader. Scott, other than to encourage and inspire people to discover what you were designed to do in terms of your career, that life is meant to be lived fully and work is a part of that. So go after and fully carry out what you were designed to do. Find that work that's going to fire you up and make you want to get out of bed.
Welcome and thank you for joining us on the Inspired Stewardship Podcast. If you truly desire to become the person who God wants you to be, then you must learn to use your time, your talent, and your treasures for your true calling. In the Inspired Stewardship Podcast, you will learn to invest in yourself, invest in others, and develop your influence so that you can impact the world. In tonight's interview with Jamie Lutz, I asked Jamie to share the most important ideas behind his book, Pathway to Promise. I asked Jamie what we should focus on first if we want to create a winning culture in our teams. And I also asked Jamie to share with you why accountability and celebration are both so important to team building and lots more. You know, one area that a lot of folks need some help with is around the area of productivity. Getting not just more things done, but actually getting the right things done can be really tough. I've got a course called Productivity for Your Passion that's designed to help you do this and then to hold you accountable and walk with you so that you can tailor productivity not just to be getting more done, but actually getting the right things done. What's more, we take the approach of looking at your personality and how you actually look at things in the world and tailor the productivity system to your personality. Because the truth is, a lot of the systems that are out there are written really well for somebody with a particular personality type, but if you have a different approach to things, they just don't work. But there's tools and techniques and approaches that you can take that will work for anyone. And we help you do that in Productivity for Your Passion. Check it out over at inspiredstewardship.com/launch. Jamie Lutz is an accomplished performance excellence strategist and a thought leader with a career spanning more than 25 years in highly acclaimed organizations like Atlantic Capital, Ritz-Carlton, Home Bank, Mortgage Corporation, and the Orlando Magic NBA basketball team. Lutz is currently Managing Director, Service Excellence at KenMed, a value-based primary care organization committed to transforming healthcare for the neediest populations. Prior to joining KenMed, Lutz was SVP of Performance Excellence at Atlantic Capital Bank, overseeing all institutional leadership development, talent management, and culture transformation initiatives. From 2016 to 2018, Jamie was the discipline leader for Forest Performance Group's award-winning Service Unleashed customer experience training program. During this time, he also specialized in client-based executive coaching and cultural design and deployment engagements. Earlier in his career, Jamie was a regional performance improvement leader at Ritz-Carlton, where he facilitated culture and process improvements projects for the 27 luxury properties. He also served as an external speaking ambassador for the Ritz-Carlton Leadership Center. Jamie and his wife, Julie, reside in Alpharetta, Georgia. He's recently published a great book called Pathway to Purpose, and we'll be talking about that today. Welcome to the show, Jamie.
Hey, Scott, it is great to be here. I've been looking forward to joining you for some time now. Very excited.
It is a great morning to have you here. And for those listening later, I hope they get a lot of value out of this. I know I got through the book. I did read all of it, Pathway to Purpose. And
After reading it, what came to me when I think about the encapsulating statement, if I had to tell someone else what it was about, is it's what you can do to create a culture where people don't just have a job, they have a purpose. They have something that's bigger than them behind it. And at first glance, that's a huge idea. That sounds like, if you're a leader, that sounds like, oh, wait a minute, that's a big thing. So if you had to sum it up yourself, if you had to narrow it down to just a few key points, where would you tell people to start if that's what they want to do in their workplace, in their church, and their small business, whatever it is?
Yeah. And a lot of times we do. I think we try to separate our work from our regular life. And the fact of the matter is we spend as adults 35-40% of our non-sleeping hours working at our jobs. And who wants to spend a third of their adult life or more not enjoying what they're doing? So I think you're right. It does. It all ties back to purpose. And when we talk about purpose, it's, if we define that word, it's about why we exist. What's our reason for being? Why do we do what we do? It's connecting that logical with the emotional, the logical mind with the emotional heart. I think as a leader, where we would start with our organization is to make sure we ourselves understand what our purpose is and what our organizational purpose is. Without that, there's no way of guiding your people down that path too. So at the end of the day, why does your organization exist? What is its greater purpose beyond making money? Money is just an outcome. What's the reason behind what you do? And hopefully that's tied to the people that you're serving. It's your customer. Number one, I would say, is understanding yourself. What is your organizational purpose? Secondly, would be you've got to make sure that your people understand that vision, that you've casted that they can grasp what it is that's important, not just to you, but to the organization and what it's seeking to do in order to serve others. So it's that alignment. So I think that alignment is number one. Number two, and I talk about it in the book, is this concept of burning the boats. You know, we've got to, as leaders, make sure that the things that are most important to the organization, things like vision, we talked about purpose, your core values, that you don't deviate from those, that those are lines in the sand that you've drawn that you're willing to burn the boats on. And you've got to make sure that you don't deviate from those things in terms of a desire to make quick revenues or profits, or a desire to perhaps cut corners and do things that might be unethical. You've got to burn the boats when it relates to that. And your people have to know that's not going to something that anyone's going to cross over that line. And then third, I think you've got to create an organization that nurtures collaboration. People want to feel like they are a part of, involved in something bigger than themselves. So you've got to collaborate. You've got to know your people. You've got to get to know them before they're going to entrust giving their energies and their psychological sweat to the cause of the organization. So there's a bunch that I could cover and that are covered in the book, Scott. For someone that's looking to instill purpose into their organization, that's where those are the things I would say you would need to start on.
So one of those kind of resonated with me, and I want to dig a little deeper because it's one where I've seen a problem occur. And that's around this idea of, you know, core values that are lines in the sand, willing to burn the boats. You don't ever deviate from these. But one of the things that I've seen happen in organizations is, you know, they establish a list of core values, and those truly are core values that are lines in the sand. However, within the organization, different leaders or different members of the organization maybe put their own little spin on what exactly one of those core values means. And so then you end up with two different parts of the organization that both sincerely believe that they are 100% implementing the heart of the core value, and yet they're doing completely different things, if that makes sense, in terms of their actions and their results and what's happening to employees and whatnot. How do you help people buy into the core values in a way that creates at least, I don't necessarily say uniformity, but at least unity around the understanding of those core values.
I think you've got to understand and you've got to articulate what the behaviors are underneath those core values. As an example, I spent a lot of my career at Ritz-Carlton, and the gold standards at Ritz-Carlton are really the foundation of those things that are most important, which include the core values, the employee promise, the service standards, all of those things. And so if I just tell you one of our core values is we want to do the right thing, that's a really noble idea, but I don't necessarily know what that looks like in practice. I really don't have any idea. And as you said, I'm going to gravitate towards what I think that looks like. At Ritz-Carlton, we had a daily stand-up, a daily huddle, where every single day at every hotel around the world for every shift, we covered each and every day one of those core standards, one of those core values. But we didn't just, it wasn't just a memorization exercise. It was really about what does that look like? So as an example, one of the service standards at Ritz-Carlton was I am involved in the planning of the work that affects. That sounds really cool, but what exactly does that look like? And so every huddle, we would take one of those standards and we would say, what does that look like in real practice? Give me an example of how you've shown that you're involved in the planning of the work in the past. What's worked, what hasn't? And so over time, that repetition, and we get tired of repetition, but that's how things become ingrained into our DNA. And so you have to articulate, here's what the expectation is, but as importantly, if not more importantly, here's what it looks like in practical, real world terms.
So one of the ideas that I resonated with, of course, as a coach myself, was you have a whole section where you talk about teaching leaders to coach to help create the culture. Can you talk a little bit about what as coaching and in this instance, coaching from leaders, and what's different about this mindset than maybe the more typical leadership mindset that often occurs in organizations?
Sure, Scott. I would probably start with the tail end of that question you just asked in terms of old school kind of command and control manager that is really looking to that sees employees as a means to an end. So they're looking to get the work done through their people. But if they could avoid having the people, boy, wouldn't that be nice? That's the kind of the mindset. It's like from a customer service perspective, gosh, if those customers wouldn't quit bothering me, right, and telling me about their issue, I could really get a lot of stuff done. And we have a tendency to think that, even though that's completely irrational. And so I think from the perspective of this idea of managers versus coaches, managers really are about managing processes, doing whatever it takes to meet that bottom line, to get the job done, with little to no interest in the people that they are managing. Whereas leaders understand that you have to develop relationships with your people in order to get the best out of them, in order to love them, and in order to get them to buy into, as we talked about earlier, the purpose and the mission of the organization. Leaders understand that they need to operate from a want to versus a have to mentality. I want my people to be successful. I want my people to love working here, because I know that's in their best interest, because that's a huge responsibility being a leader. But it's also in the best interest of the organization, because if they buy into the purpose, if they understand how what they do ties into the bigger picture, then they're going to go through walls, because they know, it's the old cliche, people don't care how much until they know how much you care. And so I think that's part of that difference in mentality between a leader and a coach. People want coaches in their lives that are going to help them achieve what they would not normally be able to achieve in and of themselves. So there's a lot to unpack there, but at the essence or the epicenter is a manager really is interested in managing processes. A leader is interested in leading people.
Yeah, that's a quote by, I believe it's Peter Drucker, that says, you manage things, you lead people.
That's right.
I used to have that on my wall whenever I was in a leadership position, because it would get, I was in a position where I had to be both an operational manager and a leader of people. And, right. and sometimes my focus did need to be on what's the process? How are we, you know, changing this? How are we refining this? What are we doing in this situation? So that, quote unquote, the trains run on time.
That's right. That's right. You know,
and then other times I had to switch and put the other hat on and go, nope, now I'm leading. And so it was my mental reminder of, am I dealing with a people situation or a process situation?
That's right. You know? And you're right. They both have to, they have to both merge, because I can have great relationships with my people, but if the processes are all messed up, it's not going to survive. Mm-hmm. So sustainability really is about.
Yeah. And again, it's not that one is good and the other is bad. It's just that they don't, you can't use one set of tools to do the other. It's mm-hmm. if you've got a metric toolbox and you're working on a motor here in the States, it doesn't work so yeah. well. You know,
that's right.
I made
that's
that
right.
mistake of grabbing a metric tool whenever I needed a US tool, that kind of thing. What do you, just curious, how would you define coaching as a leader for people? What does that look like? And going back to that idea of telling us what it looks like as opposed to yes. just what it is, what does that actually look like as a leader?
Yeah, I think I would define it really, and I kind of mentioned this, is it's motivating or influencing. It really is about influence. And if I talk about the definition of leadership, it really is influence. Coaching is motivating others to go where they would not normally go so that they can achieve what they would not normally achieve. It's inspiring people. It's capturing their hearts and their minds to be part of something, again, that's bigger than themselves. That's how I would define it in terms of what coaching looks like.
One of the other areas that you talk a lot about, and again, that really resonated with me, is this idea of accountability and celebration, mm-hmm. what I would call recognition, but it's the mm-hmm. same. I'm part of a BNI, Business Networking International, and accountability and recognition are some of their core values that they talk about. And in fact, again, sometimes I think these are some of the ones that people define different ways. It's also an area where I think a lot of organizations ignore one or the other.
Yes.
In other words, there's a lot of organizations that are really good at celebrating, but they have no accountability. And there are a lot that are really good at accountability, but have no recognition or celebration kind of thing. So how do these fit together? And why are both of these important if you're trying to build that culture of purpose?
Yeah, and it's funny you asked this, Scott, because that chapter or those two chapters in the book have been amongst the most I've gotten feedback on in terms of really interest and tell me more about that. And it really is, when you think about it, we often don't think about accountability and recognition in the same terms or really being two sides of the same coin. Mm-hmm. I can't take credit for this quote or phrase, but a former mentor, a good friend of mine, mentioned this to me before, and it was like, oh my gosh, that makes a lot of sense. So he says that accountability without recognition is demoralizing, right? So you're holding me accountable for something, but I never hear anything about any positivity at all. That really is, over time, demoralizing. But when you flip that, recognition without accountability is really hot. Everybody loves recognition, but if I don't understand why I'm being recognized, or if I feel like it's just you throwing me a bone, then that's going to feel really hollow. So those two really work together. So let's go to accountability. I think accountability has a really negative connotation yep. in our society. Very negative.
It usually means yelling at someone because they didn't follow the rules.
Exactly.
Whatever, quote, the rules are.
Exactly. And I think that goes back to the difference between kind of the traditional boss and the traditional coach, right? A boss you would perceive as yelling at you right. versus inspiring you. But accountability, I think the best of the best love accountability if it's done, if it's presented and articulated in the right way, because those of us that are high performers, we want to know where we stand. If I don't understand what the scoreboard, not only what the scoreboard reads, but what the scoreboard is, it's going to be very difficult for me to know how I'm doing. And I would imagine the people on your show and us, we want to continuously be getting better. How demoralizing is that if I don't know where I stand, if I don't know how I'm doing? And so that accountability is absolutely essential. People want to be held accountable to know if they are meeting your standards. So I think that's really important for leaders. And then the recognition piece, and we could talk forever about recognition and what the proper forms of recognition are. But people want to know that they matter. And they want to know that their efforts and the psychological energy that they're putting into their work every day makes a difference and is being recognized. So often recognition is just a simple thank you. It's a simple acknowledgement or a handwritten note. It's not always monetary in nature, and there's a lot of research around that.
No, and in fact, I don't think it doesn't have to be.
Right.
I want to go back on each of these a little bit more. So accountability, I heard in that too, that it's somewhat of a self-driven too. Mm-hmm. So it's not just accountability from the outside. You mm-hmm. know, it's also accountability because you mentioned high-driven people want to know where they stand. So there's a self-accountability in this too of, am I doing what I need to do to succeed? However, I define success as mm-hmm. well as how you define success. Is that, would you say more about that?
Yeah, and absolutely. And all of this kind of drifts back to that leadership thing, right? If we are to be great leaders, we got to be able to lead ourselves. We've got to be able to hold ourselves accountable. We got to be able to discipline ourselves. And our people will be, obviously, it's pretty obvious, they're going to be much less apt to follow us if they don't see a consistency and a structure and holding ourselves accountable to what we do. It's, we got to walk the talk. It's the old phrase of, I can tell you to do this, even as a parent, I can tell my children to do something, but if they don't see me doing it, then that's going to be that's going to create a schism there where, why would I do that, Dad? You're not following the advice that you give me. So you can't really say enough about that aspect of self-discipline and self-accountability. We've got to be able to demonstrate for others what we hold to be true. It's so important. And it's all, I think it ties back to integrity. And our people pick up on that really mm-hmm. quickly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Some of the mentors I have in my life, one reason that I consider them a mentor is because they're, quote, the same on stage as they are off stage. I don't necessarily mean that literally in terms of being on stage, but just when I see them in front of other people, they act a certain way.
Yes.
When I talk to them in private, they're still acting that way. Yeah. You know,
yeah.
It's not like I feel like, oh, now the mask came off and there's a different person here.
Just to add to that, it reminds me of, this book is largely about culture and creating culture. And one definition of culture really is what the people do, what the individuals within the organization do when the boss is not. And so if I'm not bought into what the organization is doing and I'm only following protocols because the boss is telling me to, that's not the kind of culture you want. And to your point, what happens when the boss is out of the office or the boss is not looking? That's your real culture. That's the essence of who you are. And it's true at the leadership level too. Are our people following us because it's a have to or because they see the value in what we right. bring to them and to the table?
And especially in an organization nowadays where a lot of organizations are much more distributed than they used to be. It used to, everyone went to the same place at the same time and worked, even in shift work. There was still a block of people that worked that shift. It was now it a much more distributed workspaces, much more virtual work, not just in COVID, but just even before exactly. that it was happening. Yeah. And so like I worked for a company that we worked at a place in San Antonio, but the home office was in New Jersey and it offices in multiple states and multiple countries. How do you develop culture in that kind of workplace? Because it's really easy for each little individual place. And then now, like with BNI, using that as an example, each chapter, and there's over 10,000 chapters, each one has its own culture. And yet you're yes. trying to build a unified culture at the same time. Yeah, that really makes it harder. Not in a bad way, but it just makes it a different world.
It's challenging. Yeah, it really is.
And that's, again, to back to the book, that's one of the reasons I love the book, is I think it's, in some ways, I think it's more true now that you've got to be very deliberate about doing this. Used to, I think culture in that old world could have arrived by accident.
Mm-hmm.
Now you yes. have to intentionally do it.
That's right. And you bring up a really good point, Scott, is that everybody has a culture, that whether they have articulated it or not, everybody's got one. Now, it may not be a good one, but everybody's got a culture. And so you're right, in this highly distributed, you know, world, particularly COVID, post-COVID, you've got to be very intentional about the culture you want to create.
So I'm going to shift gears and ask a few questions that I like to ask all the guests. But before I do that, is there anything else from the book or that we've been talking about this morning that you'd like to draw out and draw attention to for folks?
You know, other than the big picture, and the big picture to me, if you're someone out there that's listening that really hates your job, that gets out of bed every morning and just does not look forward to it, I would really encourage you that it's possible not just to make a living, but to have meaning in your life, and would really encourage people to take steps to get out of your comfort zone, to discover exactly what your passions are, why you feel like you were designed, what you were designed to do, and take steps to find that thing or those things that light you up, that give you life. And you may rediscover that where you are in your current profession or current job, or you may need to be very thoughtful and deliberate in determining whether you should look for something else. But none of us wants to look back someday and really be sad about the fact that we just made a living. We never really expanded beyond that. Because I think work is meant to be a noble thing. So that's what I would encourage our people to do is, hey, it's great to make a lot of money, but at the end of the day, you want to do something that you feel is aligned with what God created you to do.
Absolutely. So one of the questions I like to ask all my guests is, my brand is Inspired Stewardship. I talk a lot about stewardship on the show. And yet, again, back to that idea of drawing out what words mean for people, I've discovered that people define that word differently.
Yes.
So for you, how would you define the word stewardship, and share a little bit about the impact that it's had on you in your life?
Yeah, that's a great question. And you're right. I think it's another one of those terms that can be viewed in a number of different lens. For me, really, stewardship, from my perspective, is really about shepherding other people. Again, it ties back to that coach. Now, the coach's role is to put others before themselves so that the larger picture, the larger mindset can be achieved. So I think it's understanding your role in the lives of those around you. And of course, this is true from a professional sense, but also from a personal sense. I think our role as parents is to shepherd our children. Our role as coaches in the business world is to shepherd our people. A pastor's role is to shepherd the congregation. It's really, and this sounds cliche, but it's really about putting other people first. Because at the end of the day, think about this, and Scott, this is, we are as leaders, and again, professional, personal, we're all leaders. We have a huge responsibility, because at the end of the day, particularly from a manager, a traditional manager role, we're probably the second or third most influential person in the lives of the people that we're leading, beyond a spouse or significant other. There's a huge responsibility in that. And to me, that responsibility equals stewardship. That is something that we should not take lightly. And stewardship has played a huge role in my life, because so many people have shepherded me, have provided that stewardship type of role in my own life, from my parents to, gosh, I've been blessed with some great managers, bosses, coaches over time, that there's no way I would have been able to achieve the things I've been able to achieve if people weren't behind the scenes pushing me to be a better version of myself and coaching me along the way.
Yeah. And you've worked for some great organizations over the years. I'm sure you could list many mentors and yes, others that you've run into. I'm sure you've seen some bad examples too over the years, because
yes,
no organization is, but it, and that gets back to that idea of purpose that you were talking about earlier with folks finding their purpose. Is I do think it's important that people recognize that sometimes our joy comes out of our choices, sometimes in terms of what we're paying attention to too. There's no work on the planet that is 100% every moment of every day is your most favorite thing to do.
Right. That's right.
There's always some stuff that none of us like to do or that you don't like to do. But it's a lot of it is about where we focus, how we pay attention, what do we think about, and how do we view it, I think, as well. So another question that I like to ask everybody, and everyone always tells me this is the hardest one, is if I could pick you up magically in a time machine today and travel 100, 150 years into the future, and you were able to look back on your life and what you've done, what impact do you hope you've had on the world and left behind?
So when you ask that question, it makes me think of the Dash, and I'm sure you've been exposed to the Dash before. So the Dash is really on your tombstone or in your obituaries. There's always, there are two dates, right? There's when you were born on one side, and on the other side is the day that you passed. And in the middle is the Dash. And so to me, that's all about how did you live that Dash? The idea would be someday when I look back, it wouldn't be about the money I made or the possessions I had. It would be about, did I live my purpose? And my purpose is to inspire others to become a better version of themselves. And so I want to be able to look back someday and say, you know what? It wasn't perfect. I made mistakes along the way. All told, I feel like I was able to fulfill my purpose and I was able to live out that purpose. So for me, that time capsule would have me look back someday and it would say, well done, good and faithful servant. That would be what I would hope for.
So what's coming next for you as you continue on your journey here to live out your call and live out that Dash in the middle and help others actually become better versions of themselves? What's coming up next?
Yeah, part of that is really getting the word out. And you've been so helpful in helping me get the word out about the book. I'm not so much interested in sales of the book. I'm interested in the concepts. And there's so many people that are living quiet lives of desperation because they hate their jobs. And my hope would be that this book and its content would get out there to the world and that others would draw value from it. And that they might make changes or reevaluate whether they feel like they're living in their purpose or not. So that would be a big part of it, is this kind of initial out execution of the book and the things around it. And then from a work perspective, obviously, I've got a day job that's really important to me that I feel like is helping me fulfill my purpose. I work with a company called ChinMed, which is a healthcare organization based out of South Florida that focuses on what I believe to be a really noble purpose, and that is serving the healthcare needs of the sick, the old, and the underserved, healthcare advantage senior citizens. And gosh, other than working with children, I can't imagine something that would be more fulfilling for me personally than to be working with those that came before us. I oversee kind of the patient experience for our members, our patients, and that has been a real blessing in terms of me being able to feel like I'm fulfilling my purpose in life. So I think continuing to educate and inspire others to reevaluate their current jobs and careers and really continuing to make a difference in the particular job that I've been blessed to do.
You can find out more about Jamie Lutz, spelt L-U-T-Z, over at jamielutz.com. He's also active on Instagram as jamie.lutz and on LinkedIn and Facebook as Jamie Lutz. Jamie, is there anything else you'd like to share with the listener?
God, other than to encourage and inspire people to discover what you were designed to do in terms of your career, that life is meant to be lived fully and work is a part of that. So go after and fully carry out what you were designed to do. Find that work that's going to fire you up and make you want to get out of bed every day.
Thanks so much for listening to the Inspired Stewardship Podcast. As a subscriber and listener, we challenge you to not just sit back and passively listen, but act on what you've heard and find a way to live your calling. If you enjoyed this episode, please do us a favor. Go over to inspiredstewardship.com/iTunes rate, all one word, iTunes rate. It'll take you through how to leave a rating and review and how to make sure you're subscribed to the podcast so that you can get every episode as it comes out in your feed. Until next time, invest your time, your talent, and your treasures. Develop your influence and impact the world.